If you will, we're in Genesis. Genesis chapter 37, I believe it is. We don't need to go back over that and check it or nothing? Okay. 36 was grueling, but the end came out all right. But tonight we're in 37. And it says here, and Jacob dwelt in the land wherein his father was a stranger, in the land of Canaan. And we could also think about that Esau went to his mountain, or where he went to, and he got his possession. What he got there, he had until the day that the Lord took it away and got rid of it. But Jacob, on the other hand, lived in the land as a stranger, as a pilgrim, waiting for the promise of the land to belong to him. So it says here that he dwelt in the land where his father was a stranger, and as a stranger there. And these are the generations of Jacob. Now it says that, but it never goes into the generations of Jacob in this chapter. It just talks about Joseph and some sheep. And so it starts out saying that. So why they put that there, I don't know, but it says, and these are the generations of Jacob, Joseph being 17 years old, which would make Jacob about 118 or so right now, somewhere in that neighborhood, because he was 91 when Joseph was born, and then he had 17 years, make him 110. Anyways, he's up there. He's 100-something years old now. 108, not 18, 108. He's 108 years old. And Joseph was 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brethren, and the lad was with the sons of Bilhah and with the sons of Zilpha, his father's wives. And so we sit here saying he probably got along with these girls more than he did with Leah, because Leah and Rachel were always in conflict. So naturally, if there's conflict between this woman and this woman, there's conflict between her children and other children. And so we know that Leah and Rachel were in a conflict with each other over the love of Jacob. So he was in the field feeding the sheep, and he was with the sons of Bilhah and with the sons of Zilpha, his father's wives. And Joseph brought unto his father their evil report. Now it doesn't say exactly what their evil report was, but we can figure these guys were probably being guys, and they were doing things they weren't supposed to do while they were out away from the family and doing stuff. And so Joseph says, hey pops, let me tell you what Gad was a-doing. Let me tell you what Naphtali was a-doing. And then he goes on to the other two sons too. So he says, let me tell you pop, these old boys out there, they ain't doing what they're supposed to be doing. Now you would figure that Joseph thought he was doing good by doing this, but he was keeping tension between his brothers. It never does say what the evil report actually was. So now Israel loved Joseph more than all his children, because he was the son of his old age, and he made him a coat of many colors. Well, we know Benjamin was born after Joseph at another time, but this was Rachel's firstborn. This was his beloved's firstborn. He says, and he loved him more than all the rest of his children. And he made him a coat of many colors. In other words, he made him stand out from the rest of the children. He made an example. This is my baby. This is my boy. This is my pride. This is my wife's firstborn. And of course, the other ones are sitting there saying, uh-huh. It says here, Israel loved him more than all his children. Now we understand after Joseph gets carried away later, the eye is Benjamin after that, and Benjamin becomes his pride and joy after that. But up until that, Joseph disappears or gets assumed to be dead, Joseph is his pride and joy. Even Benjamin is down on the list. It says here, and when his brethren saw that their father loved him more than all his brethren, they hated him. Didn't say they disliked him. It says they hated him. And it says they could not speak peaceably unto him. In other words, it didn't say they would not. It said they could not. They just couldn't bring it in to say nothing nice about Joseph. There ain't nothing that we can say about Joseph that's nice, Dad. So every time they open their mouth about Joseph, is look at this dreamer, look at this babbler, look at this guy, look at this special, look at this, touch you. He's that kind of guy. They couldn't say nothing nice about Joseph. They wouldn't say anything. It's kind of like when you get saved, you don't because you won't instead of you couldn't. There's a difference there. But it says here, they would not and could not or could not speak anything peaceable. They never said anything at all nice about Joseph ever after this, after he got about 17 years old or so here. And it says here, and Joseph dreamed a dream. And he told it his brethren, and they hated him yet the more. Now, I don't think he was picking on them with this dream. I'm thinking he had this dream. He said, hey, guys, let me tell you what I just dreamed. He didn't even add it up to say, well, you know, I'm going to be over you one day, or I'm going to be king one day, or I'm going to be the Lord over Egypt one day. He just, man, I just had a fabulous dream. Let me tell you what this dream was all about. And they hated him even more because they were old enough to start putting two and two together. He's 17, so they're up to about 20, 25 years old, some of them. And so they're looking at this thing and saying, man, this dream is serious. This dream is going to get us through. And he dreamed a dream, and he told it to his brethren, and they hated him even the more. And he said unto them, hear, I pray you, this dream which I have dreamed. Please, just let me tell you my dream. Let me lay it out for you. Let me tell you what's happening. He says, for behold, we were binding sheaves. They were tying all their bands of corn stalks together and the sheaves together, getting ready to bring them into the harvest and the field. And lo, my sheaf arose and also stood upright. Now, I'm sure they were all stacked up, laying over here to the side, ready to be put on the wagon or whatever. He said, and mine just jumped up and stood up. He says, ain't that something? I mean, he's sitting there and said, wow, look, you just seen this thing. It just stood right up. And behold, your sheaves stood around and made obeisance to my sheaf. In other words, your sheaves lay on the ground and bowed down, and mine just stood right up. Can you imagine that? He's not even putting this thing together yet, and they're sitting there. Right. You expect us to bow down to you? You expect us to fall on our face before you? You think that you're going to be over us? And they're getting madder and madder and madder as they go. Said, and your sheaves made obeisance to me. They actually honored my sheaf. They actually bowed down to my sheaf. They actually held me in reverence, so to speak. And it says, and his brethren said unto him, shalt thou indeed reign over us? Really? Are you sure you got your dream right? Do you really expect us to bow down and give you honor after a while one day? Do you really think that we're going to do that? We don't even like you. We can't even stand you. And for you to have the gall to think that one day that we'll bow down and kneel down in front of you. It says, or shalt thou indeed have dominion? Now, this ain't crossed his mind yet, but shall you have dominion over us? Do you think that we are going to be under you? And they hated him yet the more for his dream and for his words. The more he did, the more they hated him. No matter how he came across with it, no matter how humble he came with his dream, no matter how he said, let me just tell you what happened. I mean, I'm not trying to say you need to bow down. Let's just tell you what happened. And the more he just tried to be just a good old brother, the more they hated him. The more they couldn't stand him. And then it says he dreamed yet another dream. He was a dreamer. It's funny here, though, when he's here, he's dreaming. He doesn't interpret the dreams to mean anything, but when he goes to prison, He interprets dreams. He learns how God gives him the ability to be able to listen to their dreams, the cook and the butler. And he says here, and he dreamed yet another dream, and he told his brethren, he just loves it, he just don't know when to quit, and said, behold, I have dreamed a dream more. And they're probably saying, get out of here. Get on back. I have dreamed a dream more, and behold, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars made obeisance unto me. The sun and the moon, mom, and the 11 stars, brothers, all made obeisance unto me. And he told it to his father and to his brethren. And his father rebuked him. Now his father understood probably, his father probably says, there might be something to this, but to keep these boys from hurting him, I've got to rebuke him at least a little bit. I've got to say, Joseph, 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 these dreams you have in Joseph, you just got to quit. Do you think that I'm actually going to bow down to you one day? Do you think your mother, now his mother's dead, so he's probably under Bilhah right now, but either way, do you think your mother's going to actually bow down to you? And your brethren too, they're going to bow down to you? Joseph, Joseph, Joseph. And so he rebuked him. And he said unto him, what is this dream that thou hast dreamed? Shall I and thy mother and thy brethren indeed come and bow down ourselves unto thee to the earth? And that's pretty low right there. You're getting on down. And his brethren envied him. But his father observed these things. In other words, I'm going to rebuke you in front of them, but in my mind back here, I'm saying, there's something to these dreams. There's something going on here. Just like when Mary and Elizabeth were both with child, there's something going on here, happening. It says here, he rebuked him, but in the back of his mind, he's saying, I'm going to put these things in my mind because there's something great going to happen with Joseph. Something's going on with Joseph. I haven't got my finger on it yet, but God's working something out with Joseph. And then it says, and his brethren envied him, but his father observed these things, saying, and his brethren went to feed their father's sheep, or his father's flocks. They didn't just have a few sheep, they had flocks, piles of sheep. And so therefore they had to move from place to place, from grass pile to grass pile to grass pile, because when the grass got ate down, if you just stayed there, they'd starve, so they had to keep. But it says here, these guys went back to Shechem. Remember, Shechem's where part of our trouble started at. Shechem is where Levi and Simeon killed a bunch of fellers. But that's been long enough now that they think that we'll just go, and they bought some land over there, so they says, we've run out of grass here, so we're going to go feed our flocks on our grass we got over at Shechem. So they go to Shechem, and Israel, that is Jacob, and Israel said unto Joseph, now this is one boy here, now 17 years old, do not thy brethren feed the flocks in Shechem? Come, and I will send thee unto them. And he said unto him, here am I. Now, to go to Shechem probably wasn't but about 18, 20 miles down the road. That's a pretty good trip right there for a young man 17 years old on foot by himself. Well, he's going to end up all the way at Dothan before it's over with. There's another 18, 20 miles somewhere. So we're talking about a pretty good trip for a young man. Nowadays, we'd get mad if you got to be 25 years old to walk down the road, and back then, a 17-year-old could just go across the countryside. It's amazing how development has changed. It says here that he says, here am I. In other words, he says, whatever you need, Dad, whatever you need. You need me to go to Shechem, I'm on my way. You need me to go wherever you want, I'm on my way. He was an obedient son. He was a ready son. Says, and he said to him, go, I pray thee, see whether it be well with thy brethren, and well with the flocks, and bring me word again. So he sent him out of the vale of Hebron, and he came to Shechem. Now he's going to go all the way by himself. There's what, 11 of those guys or 10 of those guys over here? And they're out doing the sheep by themselves and doing their thing. They got protection, they got the herd, they got servants, everything else going on. He's going to go, from the way I can read it, right by himself all the way to go see these guys. He says, go see how they're doing. First of all, go see what their welfare is, and then go see what the flock's welfare is, and then bring me back news. So in other words, I want you to go all the way over yonder, and after you check everything out, so I expect you to come all the way back again. And I want to know what's happening. Which is what a dad should want to know. He says, and he was left Hebron and came into Shechem, and a certain man found him. Behold, he was wandering in the field. So he got to the field where he knew they should be. He got to the field that he knew his dad bought, and he says, I'm looking around. The grazing's pretty well gone. I don't see no flocks. I don't see no brothers. And he's just sitting there, wow, I don't know what to do. I'm looking around. And a man sees him. And a man comes up to him, and he says, asks him, he says, what is your doings? What are you up to? And a certain man found him, and behold, he was wandering in the field. And he asked him, what seekest thou? What are you up to, young man? And he said to the man, they are departed hence, for I heard them say, let us go to Dothan. Dothan. That's a place where it's called flat with lots of grass. Dothan. Now Dothan, Alabama is called Wiregrass. Flat with a lot of grass. But anyways, they left to go to Dothan. And Joseph went after his brethren and found them at Dothan. So he says, well, they're not in Shechem. This man says they're in Dothan. My dad told me to go find out about my brothers. My dad told me to go find out about the sheep. I'm not going back till I find them and the sheep. He wasn't told to go to Dothan. He was told to go to Shechem and check on them. But he says, my brothers are still way over here. That's kind of like Christ. Christ went all the way for his folks. He didn't stop halfway and turn around. He went all the way for his folks. Suffered. This is a form of suffering right here he's going to do. It says, and when they saw him afar off. Now they're sitting around cooking some dinner or whatever, laying around with a straw in their mouth, looking at the sheep. I don't know what they're doing. But way over yonder, they see this boy coming with a colorful little suit on. And he's got this fancy little gait that he always had, whatever it is. You can tell somebody you know from a long way off by the way they walk and all that. And he looked over and says, oh man, look at there. There's Joseph. I mean, I thought we got away from Joseph. I mean, we went to Shechem, we went to Dothan, we left him all the way back at the house of Hebron. And look over to Hebron. Can you see that? That's Joseph. I guarantee you that's Joseph. I can tell by the color of his clothes. I can tell by his walk. I can tell that's him. He says, and when they saw him afar off, even before he came near to them, they conspired against him to slay him. I mean, they could tell. They see him far enough off to say, hey, let's kill this old boy. We got to get rid of him. They ain't talking about just tying him up. They ain't talking about just humiliating and running him home. They said, let us conspire to kill him. They intended for him not to go home. They intended to say, we're going to take care of this Joseph. We're so far away from dad. We're so far away from mom. There ain't no way they're going to tell what's going on with this boy. So they conspired to slay him. That means on purpose. Not by accident. They contrived to make sure that Joseph got killed. That'll end the dreams. We killed Joseph. No more dreams, no more obeisance, no more bowing down, no more having to praise him or lift him up. We got this covered. We get rid of Joseph, all the dreams go with him. He's done. And they said one to another, behold, this dreamer cometh. And I could just see them getting fired up and angry as he's walking. The quicker he gets there, the closer he gets there, the madder they're getting. Come now, therefore, let us slay him and cast him into some pit, and we will say some evil beast hath devoured him, and we shall see what will come of this dreams. Now, granted, whenever the rain came or whatever came, when this pit got filled up with water, if he was still in there, he would have floated up, and eventually somebody would have found him. But they're going to cast him in a pit hoping that he will stay down there. They're going to cast him in a pit hoping that they can contrive their story and go back to their dad and say, Joseph was eaten by some wild, ravenous beast. He was killed by a bear or a lion or something like that. He says, we're going to throw him into this pit and we will see what becomes of his dreams. In other words, his dream should end with him. His story, his legacy, whatever he thinks these dreams are about, if they meant anything, they will stop when he's dead. And Reuben heard it. Now, Reuben must have been off to the side somewhere. Reuben heard it, and he delivered him out of their hands and said, let us not kill him. Let us throw him in this pit over here. So he's thinking, I'll throw him in this pit that's dry. I'll throw him in this pit that's not full of water. I'll throw him in this pit where maybe later on when they're not watching, I'll make a roundabout back by here and I'll take a rope and I'll get him out and I'll get him back to his father. Now in the back of my mind I'm saying, you know, you slept with your father's wife. You're about to lose your inheritance. Maybe you're thinking, if I save Joseph from the rest of them, I might get me some good standing back with Dad. Well, his little dream gets messed up too. It says here, and Reuben said unto them, shed no blood, but cast him into this pit in the wilderness, and lay no hand upon him, that he might rid him out of their hand and deliver him to his father. That was his plan. And it came to pass. You ever notice it comes to pass? When Joseph was come unto his brethren, that they stripped Joseph out of his coat of many colors that was on him. And I'm thinking they probably took him down to his lowest denomination there, because they didn't want him to be recognizable. They didn't want him to be anybody that anybody would tell had any kind of standing. So if he gets rid of his coat of many colors and they get down to his undergarments, then there's nothing to distinguish him from any other regular old person. It says as soon as he walked up, he didn't even get to say, how you doing, boys? How's it going, Levi? How's it going, Simeon? As soon as he got within arm's reach, they grabbed him and they stripped that coat off of him and they threw him into the pit. No howdy do yous, no how you doing, glad to see yous. They hated this boy. They couldn't stand him. And they took him and they cast him into the pit, and the pit was empty. And that had to be a pretty good drop, because I don't think they lowered him down there real nice and gentle like with a rope. They probably just chunked him off in there. And if it didn't have any water, I imagine it's about 10, 15 foot, 20 foot deep. Probably a serious little jolt when he hit the bottom. And the pit was empty, and there was no water in it. But there probably was some snakes and scorpions and things like that down there. It doesn't say so, but I'm just imagining a pit in the desert. Probably got some critters in there that you don't want to hang around with a lot. And it says, and they sat down to eat bread. They just cast their brother into a pit, possibly with snakes, possibly with scorpions. Who knows what's down there? No water to drink. And they're just going to sit down and pass me the bread. Give me some of them beans. They are some cold-hearted guys. And they sat down to eat bread, and they lifted up their eyes and looked, and behold, a company of Ishmaelites. That means they were related to Ishmael. Ishmaelites. Now, down in a few more chapters, we're going to hear them being Midianites. You can say, now, if they were Ishmaelites, how did they become Midianites? And I'm going to help you with that. Because in those days, when you traveled across the desert or wherever, you got caravans together. They might be some Ishmaelites. They might be some Midianites. They might have been some other guys in there. And so they're all together for protection. And but anyways, the first group they see here, or the first ones that come to their mind here, are Ishmaelites. And they came from Gilead, and their camels bear spices and balms and myrrhs, and they're going to carry it down to Egypt. So in other words, they've done went somewhere, got balms and oils and spices and salves, and they got all their stuff together. And they said, now we're going to go make some money. We're going to go sell this stuff over here in Egypt. And Judah said unto his brethren, what profit? There's a man looking to make some money. He's going to die in this pit. That won't do us much good. Let's sell the old boy. What profit is it for if we slay our brother and conceal his blood? What kind of money? Let's come on, guys. Now wait a minute. If we just kill him, we can't buy no tennis shoes. We can't buy no sandals. We can't get no hats for the trip. Why don't we just sell the old boy? Let's just sell him and let's make a little money off of this thing. I mean, killing him is bad, but I mean, we can make some money here. And Judah said to his brethren, what profit is if we slay our brother and conceal his blood? Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him. So you might be saying, you know, this way we don't have to kill him, but maybe somebody on down the road might. And we can still make a little pocket change here. We still got some money going on here. We said to the Ishmaelites, and our hands won't be upon him, for he is our brother and our flesh. Well, sort of, kind of, half and half. But he's sitting here trying to make his deal with these guys. He's got to come. He is our brother now, remember? He is part of us, remember? We all got the same daddy, remember? We'd be better if we just make a few dollars and maybe they'll kill him. We don't know, but we won't have to kill him. And then he says, come and let us send to the Ishmaelites. And then he says, and they're passed by Midianites. So here we are, this caravan's coming on by, the Midianites and merchant men, and they drew and lifted up Joseph. Now, I don't think the Midianites lifted up Joseph, but the brethren lifted up Joseph, got him out of there. They sold him to the Midianites and the Ishmaelites, and they drew up Joseph out of the pit and sold Joseph to the Ishmaelites for 20 pieces of silver. 20 pieces of silver. And they brought Joseph unto Egypt. Not 30, but 20. But still, there's a sale went on here. He suffered for something. He paid for something. And one of them purchased him with something. It says here, and they went on to Egypt. And Reuben didn't get all that money, or part of that money, because it looked like Reuben was out of the deal again. He was off somewhere. Because look here, it says, and Reuben returned into the pit. He's still thinking about his plan. I'm going to go back. I'm going to pull him up out of the pit. I'm going to take you back to Dad. I'm going to get my standing back. Dad's going to pat me on the head and say, what a good boy you are. But he gets back to him for a minute and he says, and Reuben returned to the pit, and behold, Joseph was not in the pit, and he rent his clothes. He was a little upset. He said, oh boy, I'm in trouble. My plan just went down. My dream just went away. And he returned unto his brethren, and he said, the child is not. I mean, like, he was really upset. He was upset because he couldn't get back in good standing with his daddy. But he says, the child is not. And I, whither shall I go? In other words, I figured I'd come around behind and take him out of the pit. I figured I'd take him back to Dad. What in the world are we going to do? Because he's gone. The whole intent to begin with was to get him gone. The whole intent to begin with was to get him dead, first off. Then get him sold. And now he said, now what shall I do? And they took Joseph's coat, and they killed the kid, Now they, when it says they here, that means they're all together on this thing now. They're all in this thing, hook, line, sinker, and everything. It says, and they took Joseph's coat. And they killed a kid. So undoubtedly a kid's blood looked closest to human blood or whatever. Because different animals, when their blood dries, don't quite always look the same. But undoubtedly a kid's blood looks close enough to human blood. And they took a kid of the goats. And they dipped the coat in the blood. Now, I'm not thinking they just dipped the coat in the blood, but I'm thinking they took some kind of something and put some claw marks in it and scrape marks in it, because you don't just bleed without some kind of wound or something taking place. So if the animal just took the coat off of you, it wouldn't have been no blood on it. So there had to be some kind of claw mark, some kind of cut mark, some kind of looks like. So it says, and they dipped the coat in the blood, and they sent the coat. They wouldn't even bring the coat. They sent the coat. Says, and they sent the coat of many colors, and they brought it unto their father, and said, they didn't even see him face to face in this deal right off the bat. They sent somebody else to go do it. And they said unto the father, is this thy son's coat or no? Last thing he told his son was, go check on your brothers. Now he's got a messenger come with this wadded up, matted up coat with tear marks all in it. Looks just like the coat that he made for his son. And someone says, is this your son's coat or no? And he knew it. There wasn't no doubt about whose coat it was. He knew exactly whose coat it was. Is this your son's coat or no? And he says, and he knew it and said, it is my son's coat. And from the way it looked, and right off the bat, he said, and an evil beast hath devoured him. He didn't say, well, maybe he escaped, because there was enough blood on there. You didn't just cut your finger or get a scratch. They got enough blood on there. There is no way that whoever bled that much blood made it. So he says to himself, or he says to the people there, he says, an evil beast hath devoured him. Joseph is without doubt rent in pieces. In other words, he's not just dead, but whatever got a hold of him had to tear him all to pieces. So that wild animal didn't just kill him and leave him. It tore him up. No doubt about it, he says. And Jacob rent his clothes, and he put sackcloth on his loins, and he mourned for his son many days. And I'm thinking many days means more than just a few days. I'm talking about years. Because you know, when it comes time to go into Egypt, he's still pretty well mourning for Joseph. So when it says many days here, for many years, Jacob mourned for Joseph. And all his sons and all his daughters, now we don't know where these other daughters come from, unless they're the sons' wives, and I don't think many of the sons had a lot of wives right here, because they're not very old, they're not but about 20, 25, 23 years old here, so they could have, a couple of them could have had wives. This is, and all of his sons and all of his daughters rose up to comfort him. Could you imagine, you just had your brother sold into Egypt? You just made your daddy think that he was torn all to pieces by a wild animal, and you're going to go and hug him around the neck and say, oh, daddy, it's going to be okay. Oh, daddy, it's going to be all right. That's a rough bunch right there. But we got families like that. We know there's families like that. And all of his sons comforted him. But it says he refused to be comforted. Now, I can say that for all of us. We can accept what's going on in life, and we might mourn for a little while or whatever, but there are people who refuse to get over mourning and just keep on going and going and going. Our Savior says we don't have to keep mourning forever and ever, but Joseph refused to be comforted. Jacob refused to be comforted, and he mourned all the way up till they got to call to come into Egypt. Then he got a little bit happy there, but up until the call to go to Egypt, he was still in mourning for Joseph. And he refused to be comforted. And he said, For I will go down into my grave unto my son mourning. In other words, he says, I don't plan on ever getting happy again. I plan on mourning until the day I die. That's exactly what he had on his mind. That's a sad way to go, but that's how much he loved this one. None of the rest of them could even come up to that level of comfort or whatever. He said, I will go down to my grave mourning. Thus his father wept for him. I'm thinking he got up every morning crying, moping around, lollygagging, not moving around much. It says, and the Midianites, here we are back to the Midianites, sold him into Egypt unto Potiphar, the officer of Pharaoh and captain of the guard. So we're fixing to start seeing Joseph at Potiphar's house. And that's a unique little story right there, but we're going to have to save that till next week. So next week we'll find out what happens at Potiphar's house. Lucian, dismiss us, please.